On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up. The new equation.
Let's have a quick look at the front pages of this morning's newspapers because we've got an awful lot to get through. The Sunday Independent has a very bold picture of Charles J. Haughey looking out. There's some very extensive extracts from Gary Murphy, who was with us in studio last week, serialisation of his book Around the Rise to Power of Charlie Haughey, how he managed to engineer his win in that vote in the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party back in 1979. Really gripping stuff if you're into it. Also on the front page, though, some pretty more worrying contemporary information. Transplant op cancelled as COVID crisis swamps ICUs. An organ transplant operation at the Mater Hospital in Dublin had to be cancelled because of a shortage of ICU beds triggered by the COVID-19 surge. Sources said the organs became available and were delivered to the Mater Hospital on November the 12th by ambulance. The transplant patient was put on standby and the procedure was due to go ahead later that day, but the hospital's ICU beds were full. And despite a frantic check of other hospitals in the capital, no ICU beds were available and the operation had to be cancelled. It's understood that half of the Mater's ICU beds were occupied by COVID-19 patients on that day, which is a reminder that ICU beds are often taken up by people who are recovering from critical surgery. They're not people who have sustained significant injuries necessarily. There are people who need to be put on ventilation and the likes after going under the knife. So it's a reminder that when ICU capacity is clogged up, there are other consequences. A similar story on the front page of the Business Post, or at least a similarly themed story, which is that the government is seeking to avoid a circuit breaker lockdown. The government is anxiously seeking to avoid a circuit breaker in the run-up to Christmas, we are told, as pessimistic projections of COVID-19 cases from the public health officials forecast an unprecedented crisis for Irish hospitals in the weeks ahead. Several government sources said the avoidance of a lockdown scenario was a high priority, but that if cases continued to spike, new restrictions would be needed and a full lockdown could not be ruled out. Government officials are already exploring alternatives to a lockdown in December in anticipation of NPHET potentially recommending more restrictions by December the 1st. It's understood the government would prioritise keeping retail open in the run-up to Christmas, but this would mean that alternative measures may include restrictions being reimposed on hospitality, perhaps maximum numbers per table in restaurants, a return to table service in pubs, stricter curfews for pubs and restaurants, which we now know are already due to close at midnight every night anyway. The reclosure of nightclubs and large events still cannot be ruled out, one government source says. All of that comes as key hospitalisation and ICU metrics in the HSE's safety net contract with private hospitals look to be triggered this week. We're also told that ministers are to discuss the possibility of restoring some of the COVID-19 supports to the hospitality sector at a cabinet subcommittee meeting tomorrow. And that, of course, is on top of some of the other speculation there is about maybe PUP having to be reopened, which is something that Taoiseach ruled out, which I know from some other ministerial sources is something which is being now considered as something of an open question. Front page of the Sunday Times, the government is to make rapid coronavirus tests available for as little as €1 each in discount stores such as Aldi and Lidl. Stephen Donnelly, the Health Minister, will bring a memo to Cabinet on Tuesday proposing a subsidy of €2 to €3 per test, underpinning a government decision to press ahead with nationwide antigen testing, despite strong reservations from Tony Houlihan and some other members of NPHET. Houlihan has warned that the move may even lead to an increase in COVID-19 tests, an increase in COVID-19 tests, because the tests could be used incorrectly. The thrust of that piece is generally that instead of having a single standardised price for each different test, the government is likely to have a standardised subsidy, which will mean that if some pharmacists or some other outlets are selling them for perhaps €8 a pop, that then it would come down to €5 a pop, but the likes of Aldi and Lidl currently sell five for €20, which would then basically remove the cost or reduce the cost to €1 per pop. We're also told on the front page of the Sunday Times, talks on a pandemic bonus for frontline workers have been paused because of the latest surge in COVID-19 infections, but employer and trade union representatives have reached agreement with government officials about who should get an award. Sources familiar with talks at what is called the LEAF, the Labour Employer Economic Forum, say a consensus has been reached that a financial bonus of some kind should be paid to very frontline, patient-facing medical and paramedical staff. That includes nurses, doctors, ambulance crew and nursing home staff. The three government party leaders have had no formal discussion about how to do so, and LEAF hasn't considered the size of any award, which we watch closely by officials from the Department of Public Expenditure. And finally for now, the front page of the Irish Mail on Sunday, Martin defends the slow pace of booster jabs. On Taoiseach Micheál Martin has dismissed criticism of a slow booster vaccine rollout as experts urged him to get more than 1 million people who could be suitable to receive a booster by the end of this week jabbed immediately. As 5,959 new cases of COVID-19 were confirmed yesterday, Mr. Martin insisted to the Irish Mail on Sunday he is not responsible for a slow rollout of the booster programme, instead praising the 500,000 figure of those boosted so far as significant. That is your tour of the front pages of this morning's newspapers. I'm joined to go through them in further detail by Sheena Cahill from Longford, it says here in the running order. I don't know why they had to stipulate that so clearly. Sheena Cahill from Longford, former president of the Union of Students in Ireland, regular current affairs commentator, communications manager with Goshka, the President's Award. And also, I think, for the first time in this programme, by Kate O'Connell, former Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, and, of course, a pharmacist in that area as well. Good morning to you both. Kate, I'll start with yourself. Just before we even get into the papers, as a pharmacist on something of a front line dealing with the latest wave, are you still involved in the booster rollout, the vaccine rollout, or how's life been for you recently?
Well, we're still vaccinating, and we're starting the boosters on Monday, and we did a little bit of room for them last week. And we also then, once a week, deal with the hesitant. So we'll do first and second shots for that particular group. And people obviously turn 12 all the time. So we always have a cohort of people emerging.
When you say the hesitant, how do the hesitant present themselves? Do they,
well, the hesitant are a very diverse group, a grand bunch of lads. But, you know, these are people that, for whatever reason, have not been vaccinated. Sometimes you'd have people that might have been in another country and had a shot. Some people might have been undergoing surgery or chemotherapy or something that restricted them from having a shot.
Mike, so just sits by close to the microphone.
So there's various reasons why people may not have had a shot. And then there's obviously the people that were, I suppose, anti-vax to some extent. And some people thought, it's an unusual sort of narrative, but some people thought that if everyone else got vaccinated, then it'd be fine if they didn't get vaccinated.
But now, because we assumed that the vaccination would reduce transmission as well, so they'd be okay by everyone
else.
Yeah,
well, sort of piggybacking off everyone else's immunity, as it were. And now with the disproportionate amount of people in ICU that have no vaccination, that has driven a lot of people towards vaccination. The cold weather and getting into pubs is a great driver for vaccination. And you know, there's various reasons. A young lad came in during the week, he loves the cinema. And when that idea of a cinema pass came in, he decided to get vaccinated. So there's lots of reasons, but like that, we don't judge, we just hop it in and hope for the best.
You mentioned that you get a small cohort of people who are anti-vaccination. Do they come in and do they look for convincing, or do they come in to your outlets because they know of your previous career and that they want to have a bit of a political argument with you?
There'd be a bit of that, but sure, that adds to the colour of the day. But then like that, the political past can actually, I often get phone calls and correspondence from people around the country looking for advice on getting vaccination. Actually had a guy from Longford over the summer. We're nearly good friends now. it took me a long time to convince him to have two vaccines. So there's a bit of that. And also you'd have people that you'd know aren't vaccinated. And you'd sort of go, oh, did you think about having a drop of Pfizer? Would you have a drop of Pfizer now this Friday? Or that sort of convincing.
It's like a glass of whiskey.
You're trying to ply people with the last drink before you go home.
Like literally,
we have a job for the road.
Yeah. And then some people, you know, it's such a broad group. Some people just want to be asked to be vaccinated. I know that seems very needy, but some people want to say, have you been vaccinated? No, I don't believe in it. Well, would you do it? And sometimes that's enough. You know,
they're almost just angling for a conversation.
Yeah, like some people, and other people then, they're never ever engaging with a mass centre, an online booking, a phone call. They just don't have the capacity to do that. So there's so many people.
See somebody face to face and just get it done on the spot.
So to answer your question, we're doing boosters and we're doing first and second shots, and not the whole country's not to start ringing Rathgar Pharmacy this morning or the staff will run out the door.
Before I invite our Longford correspondent in to offer her thoughts on the issue, I'd imagine you're also quite busy selling antigen tests. So without asking for too many commercial secrets about the running of Rathgar Pharmacy or any other outlet, when the government is talking about trying to offer something of a standardised subsidy for each of them, what would actually be cost price for an antigen test? What does it cost a pharmacy chain to get them in the door?
It just depends, because each pack size is different, each brand is different. You know, it really does depend. You could be buying them in at around £3 in some cases. It depends. And then economies of scale, chains might have bigger buying power. And then there's different types of tests. The lollipop oral swab is very popular with kids. And that tends to be slightly more expensive, a bit more cumbersome in terms of packaging. But they are an expensive habit, antigen testing. And people are buying them. But I would be a fully paid up member of the Tony Holohan Knows Best Club. And I would be echoing his fears this morning, just from my experience working with people.
At this point, then, I better explain exactly what Tony Houlihan's concerns are. There is a sort of a passing mention of them in some of today's papers, but effectively, what we have is a statement from Tony Houlihan, which was issued overnight, and he's making the argument that if you have cold or flu symptoms, you are to isolate immediately and get a PCR test, not an antigen test. He says that the single most important thing is to make sure that you get a robust thing, but that basically his argument is that if you have symptoms that might possibly be those of a head cold or those of COVID, he doesn't want you taking an antigen test then presuming that it is a cold and going about your day, because potentially it might actually be COVID and you're spreading it to other people. Now, is that not, it seems like it's kind of straightforward enough that people should be able to tolerate that message and then just take that on board and internalise it and then just end that ambiguity.
Yeah, but that's not the case on the ground in my experience. So at the minute, I would estimate that 80% of people buying antigen tests are symptomatic, and that there has, through whatever, I don't know how it has come about, I've never seen such an unusually high level of political support for a second class test.
That's probably because there's no more capacity for the first class test.
Well, even before, the PCR capacities was supposed to be 100,000, now it's 200,000. Mm. So, you know,
and
even before that, the use was increasing. But I mean, the reality is that they are not as good as PCR. They do have a role, and I strongly believe they have a role. But my experience, and I'm working pretty much 60 hours a week in a late night pharmacy, is that people are going out at the weekend, doing a test on a Sunday morning and going, I don't have COVID, off I go and live my best life for the week. So, and if you've been in a nightclub or a match or a party on Saturday night, you're not shedding by the next morning. So it's a false.
So people are taking them because they think they'll be able to tell whether they contracted the previous night.
Yeah, people are taking them to suit their own agenda. And Dr. Wally was on the radio, I think, in here during the week. I listened to some of it. You know, when you're working on the ground, you actually see the reality of it. And, you know, you have people, I had somebody only last night whose oxygen level was dropping, and they wanted to do an antigen test. I mean, it was hospital they should be going. So somehow a narrative has got out there that these are as good as, and me and Tony Holohan and co just don't want you to have them. But I really do now, looking at it, wonder how such a massive, to some extent, choreographed campaign to allow antigen tests be free or subsidised has actually been successful now. And the cost to the state, if what's proposed on the front of the paper, if that goes ahead, it's hundreds of millions of euros, to my mind, on a flawed test that we haven't the real life data collated yet. And I would argue this morning that the reckless use of antigen testing is probably contributing to the current surge.
Okay. We might come back to the whole question of communications and whether people fully understand the circumstance that you're supposed to use them in a minute, because it strikes me that if people are taking them after they've gone on a night out, then it would be pretty easy then to convince them to just take it before they go on the night out, and at least that might be a more sensible way of doing it. Sheena, your thoughts on the communications of all of this and on the question of whether they ought to be free at the point of use?
Shocking is the answer to the communication. Like, you can't, in fairness, I'm A, not a doctor, B, not a pharmacist, so fair enough. But over the last number of months, I think, when we started opening what we're now calling high-risk activities, things like matches, things like nightclubs, pubs, all that kind of stuff, the idea that there was something that you could do when you were asymptomatic, so you didn't have any kind of cold or flu symptoms, you didn't have any difference in your physical feeling or whatever, that there was something you could do to try and check that you were still safe, that you could still engage in activities the next day or the next week. I think that was very powerful. So I think that the why antigen testing has captured the mindset there makes sense. But I think we have been really terrible in explaining the instances in which you are supposed to use them, how to use them correctly. I think really only in the last couple of days, being honest, has it been made more clear by government, even by Tony Houlihan, with regard to the connection between symptoms and PCR test specifically, that if you are feeling unwell, the PCR test is for you. Because I don't think people really were aware of that. Like, yeah. And people aren't stupid, but like, there's a lot going on. We're getting a lot of public health messaging.
But I think that's not been communicated well. You can understand why people want to use antigen as something of a crutch, though, when there is still such difficulty in trying to get a PCR test. I've popped up on the HSE registration website just right here.
Yeah, you can't get it anywhere.
Talking to us. There are no appointments today in City West. There are none in the Handball Alley at Croke Park. There are none in Finglas. There are none in Ballally. There are none at DCU. There are none in Inchicore. Now, there's a few hundred at Dublin Airport for the self-referral if you can get out that way. And there's a few in Blanchardstown. There's about 100 appointments, which is actually quite low at this time of day. But that's Dublin alone, where basically 6 out of the 8 centres are completely full. Yeah. So you can understand how
absolutely.
If people want to have a bit of a quicker turnaround, well, or people feel like waiting a day and a half isn't tenable.
Yeah, because we're talking about, like, I mean, the whole conversation about lockdowns and restrictions and stuff, but like, we are being allowed to enter spaces that are busy spaces, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's a nightclub. Nightclubs, again, by the way, the easy scapegoat for the last 2 weeks, and everyone blaming, from my perspective, young people, nightclubs, because it's optically the thing where people are gathering, when actually there's thousands going to matches and loads of older people meeting up because they've got their booster. Like, I've heard a lot of that. People going to others' houses, going to restaurants, thinking, sure, I've got my booster now, sure, I'm grand. So the thing about the antigen testing is, from my perspective, I would be of the school of thought that I do think they should be available. I do think that they are an important tool in the war that we're engaging in against COVID. But I think the mismanaged communication around when you're supposed to use them and what a response, so a negative, means, i.e. just because you've got negative doesn't mean you've got COVID. So be still extremely careful in your movements and who you're interacting with. I think we lost that. And so I do share the concern that Kate and Tony has come out with around the vector nature of it.
If the argument is that the current public health advice, for as long as these larger events are open, we all hope it stays that way, but we all know that it probably can't be guaranteed. But that if you're going to a nightclub a couple of nights a week, that you are supposed to then just take regular self-screening, maybe twice or three times a week, with an antigen test to make sure that you are not unwittingly infecting
other people. It's so expensive. It's like €25, or like in some places like more than that, to get it, like a pack of five tests.
So would making it €9 then for three for the week, would that be appropriate for you? Like, should it still be cheaper again?
I do think it should be cheaper, definitely. I think it
should, it be,
like,
free?
I think if that was possible, but I take into account, absolutely, and I'm getting glared across the room by Kate, around the cost of this to Exchequer. And I think as well, now in fairness, like, we're looking abroad at obviously the UK, who've handled nothing particularly well, but it is really frustrating when you see packets of antigen tests flying out from the NHS for free, and it's like, why can't we have that? Now, again, when you frame that up in the overall terrible response from the UK, maybe not such a great example to follow, but
no,
I don't
but if
think
if
it
you're
should
handing
be
them out like snuff at a wake, if you're handing them out to everyone who was going into a nightclub, or, well, obviously you can't hand them out in the queue because it's too late to be doing that, but that if everyone who was intending to go to a nightclub, and people now have to buy tickets to go to a nightclub the night before they go anyway.
So there's a bit more organisation than usual.
If they were all given antigen tests, if they're all available free to them, then none of those people would have any hesitancy in at least submitting for a test. And if it turns out that a couple of them might otherwise have been shedding the virus and potentially infecting or posing the risk of infecting everyone else in the same venue, then, you know, you could argue the cost pays for itself pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think, while they are a second-class test, I think they are a tool that we should be able to use, and cost shouldn't be a barrier. That's how I feel about it. So I think that as cheap as you can make them, but with way better, like, even the packets you get in the pharmacy, like, don't come with necessarily some information from the government about exactly how you're supposed to use them. We are kind of sticking things up your nose and hoping for the best and not sure if you've done it right. So I think we need to be a lot more careful around them, a lot clearer around them, and that's not happening.
Is that to say, Kate O'Connell, that there isn't any official government pamphlet that when somebody comes in and looks for an antigen test, that you don't have some official HSE literature to hand out to them?
You don't. But, you know, there will be a conversation there. But one thing that's emerged during the week, and it's only a new thing that I've heard of, is when I say to people, because I've noticed it from doing it myself, you can't be covered in alcohol gel when you're doing an antigen test because you neutralise the sample. So if you're doing it on somebody else and your hands are dripping with alcohol gel, a little bit falls on the tray. I mean, it's a void test. And lots of people think, oh, I'm totally organised here at home. I've it all laid out on the table. I'll cover myself in antigen or in alcohol gel,
you're almost trying to recreate a lab situation where you're trying to sanitise your hands and everything.
You see people's behaviour and they go, oh no, I set it all up at home and then I do my gel and then do you let it dry? And they look at me and they go, no. And I'm like, right, okay, will you wash your hands and dry them and do your test? So the simple advice like that.
How are we having this row now? How are we, like, why are we acting like this, like antigen antigen tests only came up this week or last week.
And this is another point.
Why didn't we have the row in April when Mark Ferguson and his team handed over that report, Kate?
Yeah, well, you see, you can always get a report that suits you, I would argue. And, you know, there was almost a narrative during the week, and I just have this vision, and like this is just my own view, that there's sheds of antigen tests that lads have invested in, and massive lobbying was done to use the damn things because of an expiry on them.
But if lads have sheds full of them and they're given out for free, they don't make as much money.
Somehow multiple politicians have openly lobbied on the airways for this less than perfect test.
So and if you think the doll is full of landlords, the doll is full of antigen tests.
You're the Sums guy, Gavin. To supply a box of aspirin 75 milligram, which is probably the most cost-effective, life-saving drug in Ireland, it's about €5 it costs for the government to deliver it to the 80-year-old's door. And the impact of that €5 on our health service, when we have a health service that is, I think it's 20% the budget of this year, it's struggling, and we're going to spend all of this money on an imperfect test that we're not 100% sure if it actually reduces COVID transmission. It smells to me
a communications campaign, a really effective communications campaign could cost you maybe a 5 or 6 figure sum, a really effective one, maybe a 7 figure sum if you want to blanket the whole place with it. And it seems like it's penny wise, pound foolish, because if the government decided to cover the cost price for the test that you say you were taking in, maybe they're about €3 pop. If the government made them free and you gave them to everyone who was going to a large event, people who are going to the Aviva this afternoon for the rugby, people who are going to county grounds all around the country for different county finals and various codes today, and you could stop all of those people unwittingly, you know, infecting others and avoiding situations like the front page of the Sunday Independent, where people are having transplants cancelled because there's no ICU beds available for them. It's pennywise, pound foolish.
I would not buy the argument, and again, it started during the week, if we'd only started doing the antigens earlier, we'd never be here. I don't think you can back that up with fact and science.
Gina, when you talk about having to try and just stop or cut back on some kind of free or rampant transmission in the community, it's very difficult to see how you don't do that without there being much more aggressive measures put in place than the ones that we heard about 5 days ago.
Yeah, and only during the week I was kind of bits of information coming in around a number of county councils actually starting to block off and cancel events that were due to be taking place over the December period, which to me, if there's any kind of trickle down of information there, says to me that there's going to be restrictions on the horizon. Because quite honestly, like, I mean, that's really grim, that the few minutes that we've just been listening to, it's really sobering of a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's really, really tough when you're saying to people that they have the choice of attending things that, you know, make life worth living. Things like music and venues and restaurants and bars and seeing friends and all of those things. But then also saying that by doing that, you are putting yourself at risk, but also you're putting other people at risk. And, you know, the term rationing was something that I heard from Tony Houlihan during the week.
This kind of idea of contact budgeting almost. Yeah.
But ultimately, I think it's really complex to have that freedom in society because the state doesn't want to have to restrict things on a statutory basis. But ultimately, the way we behave does impact the people around us and is ending up in our ICU beds. And that is very, very difficult. It's a very difficult balance to strike for people who are finding life extremely difficult right now and need to go to the gym or go to the hairdresser or have contact points in their daily lives, and be it for work or otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think that the call has been made. It's very, very clear. Reduce those social contacts in any capacity that you can.
I'm mindful that we are supposed to be calling this a newspaper sort of browse segment, and we haven't actually had a chance to address any of them. So before I do go to a break, Kate, do you have anything in the papers that jumped out at you about the whole COVID question, or indeed any thoughts on what we've just heard from Catherine Motherway?
Well, I think Dr. Mother was very stark and very clear, as she always is. And, you know, I think the key line there is that the current rate is unsustainable for the health service. And, you know, I do agree with her. I do think we all probably will interface with COVID at some stage. Mm. It depends on our level of immunity and what we've met before. But we just don't all want to get it at the same time. And that is the problem at the minute. There's just too many people. And also, you know, it's... don't have to mention Antonides again, but you know, why don't we have the ICU capacity? Well, you know, we need humans to run the ICU as well, and we need staff, and trying to operate a health service in a pandemic situation is very, very challenging. We've seen the amount of people who've caught COVID whilst in our health service. So that adds to, it's not as simple as, you know, money and beds. It's time, it's training, but also trying to provide a health service while there is a dangerous, deadly virus circulating has huge challenges, along with our crumbling hospital infrastructure, which isn't helping either. And we already had massive waiting lists going into this. And the delayed care is a very, very serious thing. I know the transplant issue is obviously extremely serious, but there's a whole spectrum of care being delayed. And what we're seeing in the community now is your regular knees and hips people that would have been heading off to wherever for it, they are deteriorating rapidly. So these are people usually in their mid-60s to 70s. Yeah. Who need spare parts, and their lives are becoming painful, and like that, they will need more complex care in time.
There's a lot of stuff mounting up. This morning's hospital number, by the way, 663 COVID patients in the country's hospitals. Now, a little bit of a caveat on that, because there are fewer, if any, discharges over the weekend, so it might begin to fall down a little bit early parts next week. But that number is the highest since February the 23rd of this year, which of course is a time when we were about 2 months into a full lockdown. We will knock COVID on the head there. There are a couple of other bits and pieces in today's newspapers, which we will get to after this quick break.
On the record, on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Turning ESG theory into meaningful, measurable action. It all adds up to the new equation.
Go eco with Samsung at Power City. Buy a selected Samsung washing machine or tumble dryer between now and the 31st of December, and Samsung will offset its lifetime carbon use. Look out for the Leaf on powercity.ie.
It only happens once a year, and it's amazing. The Black Friday sale at Easy Living Interiors. You won't believe how much you're saving. Incredible deals, designer steals in living, dining and more. Sofas and chairs, beds and homewares, online and in-store. But these offers are for a limited time, so hurry, don't delay. Easy Living Interiors Black Friday sale. Style your home for less your way. Easy Living Interiors. Cork, Waterford, Navan, Naas, Sandyford, Drogheda and Wexford. Sale now on.
Tis the season to save at Woodies, with 3 for 2 on Christmas decorations, 20% off all Christmas trees, and 20% off indoor and outdoor Christmas lights. So you can make your home a Christmas wonderland for less. Shop in-store, online or with Click and Collect. Woodies, we're all homemakers. T's and C's apply.
ESB Smart Energy Services partner with large energy users to deliver tangible energy savings. Through our €75 million Smart Energy Services Fund, large energy users can reduce their carbon footprint and unlock energy savings of up to 60%. With every funded solution, we can make a huge difference to Ireland's decarbonisation efforts. So join hundreds of large businesses who have partnered with us and be part of a brighter future. To arrange a callback, visit esb.ie/smartenergy today.
Remember how good it felt as an older adult pre-COVID, going to your local leisure centre or gym, exercising or meeting up with friends. As we slowly return to normal, it's important for us older adults to make regular exercise a part of our routines again, for the physical and mental health benefits it brings. Discover what your local leisure centre or gym has to offer and explore our Older Adult Exercise Project, funded by Sport Ireland. Visit irelandactive.ie.
The unmissable Sky Black Friday sale has arrived. Get Sky Q with the TV you love all in one place. And lightning fast broadband with our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home. Plus, choose from Sky Sports or Sky Cinema. All for just €60 a month for 12 months with no setup fees. Don't miss out this Black Friday. Just search Sky Black Friday. New customers only. Availability subject to location. Minimum terms and further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds. Offer ends December 9th.
Discover the Bosch laundry range at Power City. Achieve perfect washing results thanks to the Bosch Intelligent Dosing System, iDOS. Now with a free 5-year warranty. For more information, go to powercity.ie.
Looking for the perfect gift? Why not send them somewhere unexpected? Send them to the scene of the crime, where nothing is as it seems. Send them on a date with someone completely unsuitable. Send them to another land, a place where no roads lead to. Find the shortlist for the On Post Irish Book Awards at onpost.com/readerswanted and discover the joy of sending books from novels to non-fiction. On Post. proud sponsor of the Irish Book Awards.
On the Record with Gavin Riley.
Brought to you by PwC. Turning ESG theory into action. Building trust for generations to come. It all adds up to the new equation.
This is News Talk.
Your chance to win big. News Talk's cash machine.
We opened the lines once again on Friday for your chance to win big cash with our new game, News Talk's cash machine. There was €7,196.19 in the cash machine, but we had no winner. €7,196 could buy you a lot of antigen tests. You know, it could go in very handy for the Christmas socialising season. The person we did pick at random from those who did enter the competition didn't answer when we rang them just after 3 o'clock on Friday. So that cash
that
rolls over. Much like a lotto jackpot, it rolls over again and we're going to add to it tomorrow. So make sure you are listening to News Talk Breakfast tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Kira and Shane will tell you exactly how much the cash machine will have to give away. Speaking of rollovers, Kate, you are very, very tickled by a piece on page 3 of the Sunday Independent. Now that we're getting towards the actual newspapers, the piece on page 3, which has very kind language about yours truly, actually, about the astronomical odds of actually winning the lotto these days, which everyone is pre-obsessed with.
I mean, statistically, for it to roll over 47 times, it's just so improbable. But I have to say, like, I'm a major fan of Deputy Bernard Durkin. He's one of the longest standing members in Dáil and was very good to me in my time in Leinster House, and it just made me laugh so much when I heard his comments that this wouldn't have happened in Ronan Collins. It really lightened my week.
There was a bit of me that wondered whether he had written the press release himself when he said that there were higher odds of Shergar winning Squid Game,
which I don't know are necessarily the
cultural references that made.
Oh, he'd be fine with that. Bernard's okay. I would argue that
man who needed help using Zoom when I spoke to him on Friday, so I'm not sure how.
But still, he would
Netflix
be. That'd be
is.
Different. But he would be very on trend in terms of modern parlance and modern activities. He mightn't be so good at the Zoom, but I do think it made us all laugh a bit this week when we have a veteran deputy sitting on. I think, is he on public accounts and finance?
The piece on the Sunday Independent by Liam Collins is quite generous to me. He said it refers to me, Gavin Riley, the nerdy, well-informed News Talk
it's
presenter.
It's what you always dreamed of.
Well, that's
the pink patches on your cheeks there, Gavin.
Yeah, this is me. You know, they, if anyone who watched Mean Girls was
you
told that Matthew's was social suicide, look at me now, Mom. The odds of winning the lottery, there are 10.7 million combinations of numbers, and they're only sold even for a standard lotto. It's impossible to know how many tickets for certain are sold, but there's somewhere, give or take on average, you can estimate around 1.4 million lines for each draw, which when there's 10.7 million combinations is only a fraction of the possible numbers. So on average there should be a winner around every 8 draws or so. The odds of it going unclaimed 47 times in a row are about 649 or 650 to 1.
Could you clarify something for me, Gavin? Because I don't know, I don't really follow this now. But like, could you be a syndicate and buy all the possible numbers if it was a big enough pool? Like, say
no,
20.
That's literally why the jackpot is capped as it currently stands.
Okay.
Because you could spend €21 million buying every possible selection.
So that
of
you
numbers.
Could possibly win.
I'm probably showing my age, but this happened.
It's happened back
it
in 1992.
Back in the day. I think there's a documentary on RT.
I think there was a scandal about it once upon a time, and it's mentioned the Scruffy Murphy syndicate, where back in the day when.
There's your Sunday night sorted now.
Back in the day when there was only 36 numbers, basically, it was possible to buy every single combination, and one syndicate tried to do it. They didn't manage to get the whole way. I think they were nobbled.
They had to drive around the country because this was before
they
apps
did,
and stuff.
Because you couldn't do it online.
Tearing around, filling
so
in slips.
You were taking out slips, and there was no quick picks either, so somebody had to manually do each of them. And they shared the jackpot. They won the jackpot, but they had to split it with two other people. But when you add in all the match 5 and match 4 prizes as well, they spent around €800,000 on tickets, and
he
they got $1.3 million in prize money.
Avid
Scunnel watcher, me. Although I do, of course, spend most of my time watching Virgin Media Television. On a more serious note, Sheena, there's a couple of pieces in today's Business Post about the boom. The number of cranes on the Dublin skyline is close to an all-time record. Seems like the tiger is back. The Celtic Phoenix. How are you? But you have some concerns around some of the claims being made that Ireland quite literally needs foreign money because there isn't enough money on Irish shores to build all the housing we need.
Yeah, look, I know that we are a small country. Everybody listening knows this. We always hear about this, about the open economy. We all know about foreign direct investment, how important it is. But my problem or my concern isn't that we're demonising these really lovely corporations, you know, by calling them cuckoo or vulture funds. And that's one of the arguments made, in a Killian Woods article there on page 18 in the Business Post. My concern is that what they are actually building in the market in terms of homes or houses or apartments are really being built not to be affordable. So they're essentially the problem is not that we don't need them to build, but that what they are building or what we are allowing them to build are a lot of one bed apartments or almost executive suites that are barely above the minimum floor plan that you would be required to have for a house to purchase it as an apartment.
They would probably say that's just the cost of building, that it's not economical to deliver anything that's cheaper than
that. Well, that is obviously and I think it's Professor Ronan Lyons from UCD had kind of pointed out in a DAFT report that essentially the cost of building, you know, at the moment was looking at that, if you were to sell, it would be viable only for households with a gross annual income of at least 100,000 per year, which for me is just like, but we are allowing this in the market. Like, I think I'm not suggesting that we can't have private investment funds build anything in Ireland. But to the rate that they're doing it, they are creating a scenario where anything that's being built is absolutely colossal money. And even to rent it would be from 1,800 a month. And I don't know too many people who can actually afford that. And a lot of these funds do operate a scenario where it's like almost notional, where they don't even have to rent out every apartment in the building.
Because their share price is more based on the value of their portfolio and not actually the money that we're taking in. I'd love to spend more time talking about it because it is a genuinely pressing issue, but I'm afraid we are completely out of time. Sheena Cahill, Communications Manager with Goshka and a fan of pollinators, Kate O'Connell, pharmacist, and not a fan of antigen tests. At least we've established that much.
If you've gotten any bulbs, please plant them and sign up today for your certificate on goshka.ie.
Sheena loves the bees.
I do.
Thank you both very much for coming in.